the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas, 3:07 PM on Tuesday, the 3rd of April, 2007. Amazed I got through all that so quickly. A lot of numbers there. I'd like to introduce to the audience the members of the committee that are present here. Representatives Mike Dugan, Ralph Samuels, Scott Kawasaki, Nancy Dahlstrom, and myself, the Chair Vic Coring. We're here finally at the end of this process, or I assume it'll be the end of the process as far as hearing the amendments, final ones it is, on the AGIA bill, House Bill 177. The plan is to take those amendments and then move that bill out of committee and move it up to House Resources so we can get this thing moving along quickly and hopefully have this thing accomplished by the end of the legislative session. I'd like to, before we get into amendment number 9 by Representative Dugan, which is one that he asked us to hold over from the last meeting, I'd like to go to Mike and have him offer some remarks that he has requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need the drafters tell me I need to make a correction for the record here. There's a conflict between amendment number 2 and amendment number 6, which the committee, both of which passed the committee yesterday. It was yesterday, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. It seems like a few days ago, but yeah. It was.
Anyway, what happened is amendment number 2 changed the wording in situations where the state would compensate the licensee in the event of a failed project, and what it did was limit it to qualified costs. And then amendment number 6 eliminated one of the scenarios under which the state would pay anything at all. And so the way this, for the purposes of drafting, the way it should be read is as if number two happened first, as it did, mm-hmm. and that 6 amends the bill as it had been previously amended by 2. The net effect is still that that it's was the intent of the committee by approving amendment number 6 that the state gets the data at no cost in that situation.
Okay. My understanding is, but perhaps if I can get some direction legal-wise from Mr. Bullock on that. Mr. Bullock, would you please join us at the table? I just want to make sure before I make an announcement here that it's the right announcement to make, and I was going to just simply say that we don't need any kind of formal motion. We can just simply accept that language change and for the record. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, the conflict came up because amendment number 2, I believe, allowed for the payment of the qualified costs that the licensee had actually incurred and expended. And number 6 took out that part of the section that was put in, although with different wording. And I talked to the sponsor of the amendment, Representative Dugan, and he said his intent was is that all the transfers would be at no cost to the state. Is that correct, right, sir?
Okay. If the record reflect that change, that correction, sure would appreciate it. And thank you, Representative Dugan, for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So with that, we'll get into the amendments here. And the first one will be a holdover amendment from yesterday, and that would be amendment number 9 by Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 9.
Okay. We have an objection. Please speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 9, first it should read page 8, line 30, rather than page 7, line 30.
Okay.
There. And what it does is it removes the coordinator from the application review and application decision processes, and under that, that would revert to the original version of the bill, which was just the commissioners. And I'm offering the amendment because it's not clear when the coordinator is going to be, appointed. And really, the coordinator is supposed to be dealing with state agencies rather than the applications themselves. So it just struck me that probably we might want to take those out.
Okay. I might note also, and thank you, Representative Dugan, that this was a adding the coordinator language in there was something I had inserted in the original CS, and I concur with Representative Dugan's suggested changes here after consulting with the folks, including the administration, who thought it would be an improvement to the bill. So I would request that the committee support this amendment. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just clarification for me, so the administration is fine with that?
Yes, they are.
That removing that? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll remove my objection to amendment number 9.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 9 is passed. So we'll now move on to, if I've got the sequence correct, I believe we're at amendment number 20. Did I say that right, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. So amendment number 20, and what we'll do is we'll go back to Representative Dugan because he has one more here that has been just produced here today, and hopefully everybody has a copy of it. It's referencing section 43.90.180, dealing with notice review and comment. So we'll call that one amendment number 20. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 20.
Object.
It's been objected to. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The citation should actually be 43.90.160, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not organized. I know I'm late to committee, but I got to get organized
let's
here.
Let's take a brief ideas.
Absolutely.
Certain individuals, Representative Jay Ramos has joined us, as well as Vice Chair Kurt Olson, and of course we have Commissioner of Revenue, help me out here.
Galvin,
I'm sorry. A lot on my mind here, and I'm very sorry, Pat. Sometimes I forget my own name. Sometimes I forget my own name, so I got to write out my script so I can read it off my sheet here as to who I am, so please understand. Okay, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where were we? Have I moved this, and has it been objected to?
It has.
Thank you. Good. I would hate to miss the objection part of the proceedings. Mr. Chairman, this should be read on page 10, following line 9. As the committee is aware, I have concerns about the legislature's ability to appropriately review the award of the license. And the administration, I believe Commissioner Galvin said yesterday that they were working on some language, and they brought some language forward here, which allows all of the information that's collected under this to be reported to the appropriate sort of legislative officials here, and it allows legislators upon signing a, I don't know what they call a suitable confidentiality agreement, I think, to have access to all that information as well. I think that this is probably, given that this is going to be the approach that we're going to take, that this is a necessary addition to the bill. And I'm sure the commissioner could speak to that if you wanted him to.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Representative Dugan. Just the information provided, and I'm looking for a time. The making sure that we get at the beginning of the process and not the day before. And I understand your intent, I think, but
right.
Maybe Mr. Bullock. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Pat Galvin, the Commissioner of Department of Revenue. We put this in the section of the bill with the announcement, with the initial notice. Our intent is that the confidential information would be available to the legislature at the beginning of the public review. It wouldn't be at the beginning of the legislative review. And so if there needs to be language in your mind to clarify that, we put it in this section for that purpose, so that it would be available at that time.
Mr. Chairman, could we make it a conceptual amendment to just make sure that our drafter can go through and make sure that that's, I think that's the intent everybody has.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Do you wish to remove your objection?
I'll remove my objection to amendment.
If there's no further objection, amendment number 20 has been adopted. And Representative Dugan, is that your last amendment then?
I certainly hope so, Mr. Chairman.
I hope so too. But they've all been very good, and they've helped enhance the bill, so I do appreciate your efforts and all you've contributed here. So I'd like to move to the next series of amendments here by Representative Ramirez. And Jay, is there any particular order you wish to take these amendments, or shall we just...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go from the easiest to the hardest.
Okay. All right. We'll let you decide which one's the easiest for us, okay?
Yes, sir. If I could direct the members to the one that has bold print, looks like this is
page 3.
It says
page 3, line 30.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we will call this amendment number 21. Okay.
Thank you. I move amendment number 21, Mr. Chairman.
Check.
Has been objected to, for I assume, for discussion. So, Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, excellent work on this bill so far. This amendment, conceptual amendment number 21, has to do with alignment, Mr. Chairman. Our hope is that we see a breadth of potential licensees, and when those applicants come forward, whether it's the Port Authority or if it's TransCanada by itself or TransCanada with producers or Mid-America with native corporations, I'm very interested in the alignment. So I would call number 21 the alignment amendment that would disclose the applicant, affiliates, partners in joint ventures, similar entities, equity stakes, percentages, so that we know, you know, which group the potential applicant represents. Simple as that.
Is there any further discussion on amendment number 21? Representative Samuels?
I just want to think about it for a second. This is on the anybody who puts the application in, you must have the affiliates.
Through the chair, you would disclose who the members are of your entity, of your LLC or whatever the prevailing entity is, and names, addresses, and the percentage of the interest.
And Mr. Chair, that would include any subsidiaries also, or anything, correct?
Just alignment is what I'm interested
right.
in. Who are we dealing with?
And that question was from Representative Alstrom for the record. So, please, before you ask any questions, if you would request to be acknowledged by the chair.
I will remove my objection. I can't see the hidden problem, but
oh, it's there.
It's there somewhere.
And I just snuck it by you through the chair. No, it's not. I'm just joking. Yeah.
The objection to amendment number 21 is no longer there. I assume there is no other objections from members. So, with that, amendment number 21 is passed. We move to amendment number 22, and Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 22 would be E.10. It may have a cover letter on it from Legal Services, I think. This is my favorite amendment, amendment number 22, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I move amendment number 22.
Object.
That's an objective too, Representative Ramirez.
As we have discussed, Mr. Chairman, there are in fact two open seasons. The first open season is when the producers have an opportunity to nominate. Well, there may be three if
maybe one.
Yes. The concern is not just the open season where the producers would nominate gas into the line, but also when the line runs by the five offtake points. Those communities have to nominate a certain amount of gas into their communities. And presently, we only have one community or one region in the state of Alaska that's fully gasified, and that is the South Central region, who simply would be pivoting their gas supply from the Cook Inlet to North Slope gas. Fairbanks has a modest amount of gas utility infrastructure. We have approximately 1,000 residential and commercial customers that represent probably about 3% of the marketplace. The other three offtake points have yet to be determined, and the communities that they serve have yet to be determined. The concern that I have, Mr. Chairman, is if you talk to NSTAR or if you talk to Fairbanks Natural Gas about the cost of putting in a line of a mile of gas, even if it's in a 1-inch residential pipe, the cost is considerable. And if it takes us 4 years, once we get to certification and through to the construction phase, when is it going to be economic for my community and the gas utility that will serve my community to actually plumb the gas pipes? If we wait until we're gas ready, then we will miss the opportunity at the takeoff point to nominate gas into our community. And so the interest I have is to create a low interest revolving or gas utility revolving loan fund, which is unfunded at this point in time, and something that would require a separate piece of legislation once a GEO was passed and we get further down the road. But the notion is that when gas comes from the North Slope, I want a gas pipe to be in front of my house and in front of my business and in front of as many communities as is practical given the location of the offtake point. And if it's non-economic for the prevailing gas utility in the area to put in the pipe, because gas in a pipe may be 2.5 or 3 years away. For instance, Mr. Chair, as we discussed in earlier meetings here, in Fairbanks, we're paying $16.80 per MCF for the same natural gas, the same NSTAR gas that Anchorage and South Central customers are paying $8 an MCF for. And we're scheduled for another rate increase because of the recent WACOG ruling, weighted average cost of gas ruling that just came from the RCA. So it's already going to be, by the time that we absorb that cost, it's already going to be about $3 a gallon of oil equivalent to run gas in the Fairbanks market. And if you had to amortize the cost of that pipe and then wait 4 more years for there to be inexpensive gas in that pipe, the burden of that infrastructure is going to pass on to the existing rate base, or it's going to have to be borne by the utility that's waiting for cost-effective gas in a pipe. And it would seem that that same concern would be out there for the three other offtake points. Mm-hmm. And so in a meeting that I had with Commissioner Naughty of Commerce and Economic Development, I described this as what should be a primary concern to him, that the concern of Commissioner Galvin, who's doing an excellent job, and Commissioner Irwin, who's doing an excellent job, is that Revenue and Natural Resources is concerned about getting the gas from the North Slope to a viable market and from getting money from that viable market back into the state's general fund. But I want to make sure that somebody is concerned about getting the gas in the big pipe to not only South Central, which has the easiest time because that's just a pivot of supply, but in Fairbanks, I have 97% of the broader market that needs a gas supply, mm-hmm. and the three other offtake points are yet to be determined, and which communities that they serve are yet to be determined. And I want to make sure that we have something that's in AGEA, mm-hmm. that speaks to that. And so this creates a very underdeveloped concept that would benefit from subsequent legislation. Nevertheless, I think it's appropriate for it to be in AGEA so that Commissioner Naughty really has a very clear a clear sense of direction, mm-hmm. in developing legislation through the governor to the governor's office to address this, so that as AGEA goes forward through its different seminal tests, we can begin the gasification of as much of the state of Alaska as the five offtake points allow, and not just existing the existing infrastructure, which is largely in South Central. Mm-hmm. That's the purpose of this amendment.
Thank you very much. Does anybody care to address this? Representative Samuels?
Thank you. A question for the sponsor. It keeps mentioning the authority. It's establishing the authority. The authority may make loans. When the authority makes a loan, the authority shall pay the authority.
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, that's a higher authority. No, I don't have the answer to that.
It's right here.
In the.
I think it's the Alaska Energy Authority.
Okay.
If you could get to a higher authority, you wouldn't need the amendment.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll remove my objection in a minute. I don't want to end up going down a road. It's just creating the fund, and it's not doing the appropriation. But we don't want to go down a road where one community is now getting what could be characterized as a low-interest loan or a subsidy of some kind, and getting into a regional political battle, because now it's going to be propane at the Yukon is now going to want a low-interest loan for this, and the bill then just becomes more and more and more complicated with what we're going to do with money, which we haven't got yet. I mean, I understand where you're going, and I sympathize, and Fairbanks is the largest community that will be right along the route no matter which way the route goes. So I'll remove my objection, but I'd like to hear from the commissioner. It makes me a little uncomfortable to pick and say, this community will take care of, but all the rest we shall not. And I realize Anchorage has the advantage already. You just turn on a spigot. And
right.
Pretty much.
A little oversimplification there. Mm-hmm.
Don, since you are there and you're the author of this memo, would you be so kind to give your thoughts on this as well?
I just want to make my name's Don Bullock. I'm one of your legislative counsel. I just want to make a few points about the construction of this. Gas Utility Revolving Loan Fund. The language is primarily based on the Rural Electrification Revolving Loan Fund, so most of the language is already being applied. The fund would not be established until the date the license is issued. And so it has a conditional effective date, that there's a license issued, and then on that date, that revolving loan fund would be created.
Did you have
I'd like to hear what Mr. Galvin had to say.
And the gentleman whose name I forgot. I'm tired, Pat. We're at the end of this process, and I'm brain fried.
Oh, yeah,
I have every right to forget names.
I think I've run through just about every department that I've said I've worked for, so you have nothing to apologize for. So for the record, I'm Pat Galvin, Commissioner of Revenue. We don't object to the amendment. We think that it is a very important issue that needs to be addressed. We share some concern, as expressed by Representative Samuels, about adding too much to the bill. We do want to focus on the primary goal, which is to get the gas line going and to get somebody building it. With that in mind, I think that we'll leave it to you guys in terms of how you want to proceed with recognizing the other interests that are going to be associated with the gas line, and whether now is the time to deal with any particular one. I think that it has been discussed that the gasification issue is one that we need to get ahead of, that it's not one that we want to wait until we get a gas line to start thinking about.
Yeah.
So we do recognize a certain timeliness to getting it addressed so that folks can start preparing for the opportunity to participate in the in-state gas opportunities that are going to come down the pike. So with that in mind, we don't object to this, but we do express some reservations about adding too much to the bill. Mm-hmm. If it's going to end up being mm-hmm. something that becomes controversial. And mm-hmm. I don't think that this is necessarily regional. I don't know enough about it to really be able to say, but we would be concerned to add too much to it.
Right. Thank you. The old Christmas tree effect, right?
Or is this I think this is a present under the tree, if yeah. I remember correctly. Yeah. Right analogy.
Well, I was going to make the observation. I don't think this encumbers the bill too much, and I certainly support the amendment and appreciate Jay's advocacy of his constituents in Fairbanks. They certainly need the gas there, and if this is one way to eventually accomplish that through this fund, I think that's a good thing. So I thank the representative for adding this. Any further comments on amendment number 22? Representative Kawasaki?
No. I guess I got the answer. It was just whether he thought this should be addressed in separate legislation, or whether he felt like adding this to a GIA. I don't want to bog down a GIA with any more details than we've already got. Pat, Mr. Galvin doesn't have any problems with adding this in,
right,
I guess.
Representative Samuels?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Well, the objection has been removed, so consequently, amendment number 22 has been adopted. We'll move now to amendment number 23.
Chairman.
Representative Ramirez.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Number 23 would be page 8, line 16.
Any objection to moving amendment number 23? As noted. I will object just for discussion. Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We tried to, this is a conceptual amendment so that the drafter can massage it appropriately. Under the previous administration, one of the things that they were correct in assessing is that Alaskans wanted to participate in ownership of the gas line, of the hardware itself. The mechanism by which they wanted to participate, the LLC and Alaska Pipe Co., and was very complex and diluted the state's rights, the state of Alaska's rights as a sovereign, and it was problematic to me. On the other hand, there are only a couple of entities in Alaska that are large enough to participate in the time and the risk component that are associated with a project and an undertaking this large. Some of the larger native corporations probably could withstand the time and risk component. the Alaska Permanent Fund Division could withstand that. And so I searched for a placeholder to take the state of Alaska's place for some ownership. And in working with the administration, although I don't know how crazy they are about this, but we talked about segregating it just to the state of Alaska's portion of the pipe, meaning not as it crosses over into Canada. I was with a Deputy Commissioner Rutherford, who's not in love with this idea, but helped me create language so that should it find its way in, it is the most tolerable language for the administration. I, on the other hand, am an advocate of this, so I asked her not to talk me out of it and just to help me shape it so that if it got in and she didn't like it, she would like the best possible product that we could come up with. My interest is in having a vehicle so that all Alaskans can feel like they have an ownership in the pipe. We presumed that the cost of the pipe was, we accepted the administration's stylized number of $20 billion to build a pipe from here to Alberta, and that the Alaska portion would be approximately 50% of that, which would be $10 billion. 5% of that would be $500 million of the total scope of the project. If the equity on that is $3 billion, then $500 million would approximate 15%, between one-fifth and one-sixth, perhaps one-seventh or one-eighth by the time that we factor in the likely cost overruns for a project of this magnitude. But it would give the Alaska Permanent Fund Division the opportunity to participate. It would give the Permanent Fund Division that enjoys a historical rate of return that's between 8% and 9%. An investment return on this share on this $500 million roughly of between 12 and 14% depending on what FERC regulates, and it probably would also withstand the prudent investor rule because if the fund with $38 billion, a $500 million investment is 1.5%, and by the time that this gas line is constructed, it's likely to be closer to 1% of the of the value of the fund would be my guess if you take the fund value out another 4 or 5 years with reasonable compounding after dividends. So with that as a conceptual amendment so that the drafter can have some latitude, this is the language that the administration helped me come up with, and I'd be delighted if Commissioner Galvin or Deputy Commissioner Rutherford wanted to come up and tell me why it's a cumbersome tool and not something that they want to help everyday Alaskans own part of the pipe. But whatever, Mr. Chairman.
Or why it's a very good amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Galvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for phrasing the question the way you did. We do not oppose the idea of permanent fund owning a portion of the gas line. It, as a member of the Board of Trustees, it's something we probably would be looking at if the opportunity presented itself to invest in that line. What we are concerned about is putting an obligation on our lessee to commit to offer an equity ownership without any terms really being specified and what that offer would need to be, and also just adds an additional requirement in an environment that we're trying to foster competition. We're trying to get more people interested in taking on this venture. And it concerns us when we say, here's what we want you to do, and in addition, we want you to, hey, hold a certain percent, 5% of the ownership out there and strike a deal with particular people we're gonna choose to strike a deal with, at terms that we're not gonna completely specify. To us, it adds a level of complexity, a level of uncertainty for the potential participant in terms of what they're getting themselves into. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it may not result in the permanent fund with ownership because we don't know what those terms are going to be and whether or not the permanent fund or the ARM board or whoever else may qualify for this decides to make that investment. I think that if a project were to come to fruition, it would be something that these entities may be looking at. I know that as a member of both the ARM and the Permanent Fund, we're looking at infrastructure as something that we may be investing in at some point in the future. And I don't think that there's anything in a G right now that would prohibit that opportunity so long as the licensee were amenable to it. What this amendment would do is make it a mandatory requirement to create that sort of market for a particular investment, and we're not comfortable with that.
Mr. Samuels?
Thank you. I think I would be more comfortable putting this in the criteria section, so it said if an entity, if a consortium of the producers or whoever, if you agreed to offer a portion of it to the permanent fund or ASRC or SERI or whoever, that that could be one of your unweighted factors. I think I'd be more comfortable with that, but forcing a partner, especially a partner of a bureaucratic government, quasi-political faction, I think I would be more comfortable putting it at the end. We're saying, if you're willing to sell some to Alaskans, it's a factor amongst all of the other unweighted unweighted nebulous decision-making process. I'd be more comfortable at the end, but I'm going to maintain my objection to this unless we want to put it in the, at the back end of the process.
Mr. Chair, if I can speak to that. Mm-hmm. I guess just start off, I disagree with the characterization of nebulous. Just put that on the record. We have clarified that the evaluation criteria comes down to two different factors. One is the net present value to the state. The second one is likelihood of success. I don't see putting ownership by a quasi-state entity as something that easily fits into either one of those evaluation criteria, and it would create some difficulty in trying to quantify it one way or the other. I think the idea has merit in terms of looking at it from the value to the state as a whole, but I think it becomes a nebulous ability to actually choose, you know, how much that actually increases the value of the project. In light of the previous amendment, the two back, where we talk about the entities that will be involved in the project, I think that to some extent built into that is a recognition that we're going to want to know how much of this are folks that we know, that we have confidence in, that we know are going to carry it out. And I think the overall intent that Representative Ramirez has described is to get more sort of Alaskan involvement in this. And we kind of see the previous amendment providing at least a window to recognizing how the project is providing that opportunity, and not necessarily making it either a mandatory or an evaluative criteria, but at least providing a window to whether or not an application has provided that as part of its initial conception.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was just answered. Thank you.
Okay, over to Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand how this would work. So the permanent fund would say we want to buy 5%, just to use the number that's the maximum. Here's the question I want to ask. They're not actually buying the pipe, right? They're actually becoming a part of whatever entity is going to build the pipe. Am I understanding that correctly? I'm not sure who I'm asking this of, so I'll ask you, Commissioner.
As written,
better get this right, Commissioner.
As written, it would be an ownership interest, which would be at the outset of the project, mm-hmm. and so they would own the pipe in the end. They'd own a piece of the entity that would build the pipe and then own the pipe.
They'd own the company that owned a piece of the company that owned the pipe. Is that correct? Which would mean that if I were going to invest and there were cost overruns, they'd come back to me and say, you got to pony up your proportionate share of whatever the equity investment of this cost overrun has to be. Is that how that would work?
That's part of the problem that we have with trying to resolve this type of a desire in a very quick way, is just that level of complexity. Mm-hmm. Is that there are a myriad of ways that you could participate as an owner in a project of this type. You could participate with no obligation to commit more if there are cost overruns. You could participate with an option to add to, so that your ownership interest isn't diluted. You could participate with an obligation to maintain your percentage of ownership and continue to contribute. I think the approach here, the reasonable commercial terms, is I think intended to provide an opportunity for that to be negotiated out. I think the fact that it's something that they're obligated to make at least 5% available, and it could be more, creates a potential side issue associated with their formation, their obligations under the lease, if there's a dispute over how reasonable they're making their commercial terms and so forth. That's, I mean, we're trying to avoid anything that's going to slow this thing down, and if we end up creating potential side conflicts over their obligations to provide reasonable commercial terms to the permanent funder, then it just, to us, creates the risk of a side issue sidetracking the project down the road.
Mm-hmm. Representative Ramos?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all due respect, there are already a myriad of complexities in this bill. And I perceive this precisely as the commissioner has described it, as being a fixed variable, in the same way that a PLA that's already in here is a fixed variable. And I think that the phrase reasonably commercial terms allows for there to be an interpretation of whether there was a cost overrun, whether this would be a diminished investment or and dilutive to the state's interest. I think that the First Amendment, Amendment Number 21 that we covered, that went to alignment, mm-hmm. That this would simply indicate that that the permanent fund division, which is what entity I mean by Amendment Number 23, is the permanent fund division, would give all Alaskans the opportunity to own a part of the pipe with a guaranteed return of between 12% and 14%. Irregardless of cost overruns, because we've covered in previous meetings the mechanism for the debt and the equity financing, and it's a guaranteed deal. That's precisely what the producers are frightened to death about, is that it's a guaranteed return, and if the wrong people build it, then the producers are going to be paying that premium for the next 30 to 50 years. That's precisely what we've been talking about for the last couple of years. So whoever enjoys a portion of the pipe ownership is pretty darn happy. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the things that the Murkowski administration had determined, is that 80% of all Alaskans wanted to have some mechanism for pipe ownership, and this affords all Alaskans a little bit of spit in the game, is my perception. And since it's a fixed variable for all potential applicants, I think that, yes, it does add a complexity. I think that the bill without this is no more or less complex. I think that as you know, somebody who's been an owner of the Alaska Permanent Fund since it was begun, I'd be delighted if this was one of the ownership pieces, one of the investments that the Permanent Fund Division enjoyed. And I believe that the phrase reasonably commercial terms, that the administration helped me craft that term to provide some flexibility in this amendment, that this is precisely what my intent is as the drafter, is to allow for 670,000 Alaskans to enjoy a fractional ownership and a fixed rate of return that would be FERC regulated. And if I thought that if I thought that the success or failure of AGIA attracting a qualified applicant as a licensee hinged on whether the permanent fund division had an ownership interest or not, I would think much more carefully about submitting this as an amendment. But since I believe that it will be other variables that determine whether or not AGIA succeeds, and I hope that it does, and believe that it shall. Mm-hmm. I think that Alaskans would all be grateful that they had some fractional interest in the pipe itself. I think it was one of the great missed opportunities that Alaskans don't have an ownership share of the TAPS line. Mm-hmm. Look at all the billions and billions and billions of dollars that it's made. Its life has long since been depreciated away, and it's still making money and will continue to do so for decades yet to come. And I think the same thing will be true off of this piece. It's not just the gas in the pipe that Alaska should enjoy some of the fruit of. We should enjoy some of the fruit that comes from the hardware as well, and the Alaska Permanent Fund can enjoy that benefit without diminishing or diluting the sovereign rights that accrue to the state of Alaska, who needs to be the state of Alaska in its negotiations. Mm-hmm. Permanent Fund Division operates very separately from the state of Alaska anyway. Just ask anybody at this table who's ever tried to touch it.
Thank you. So Representative Dugan, followed by Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the Permanent Fund Corporation were to buy this 5% that's on this piece of paper, the debt equity ratio for the construction of the pipeline is spelled out in the bill, right? It's at 70-30. Just keep nodding if I'm saying the right things here, and interrupt me if I'm not, please.
Through the chair, just to clarify, that's the debt-equity ratio that the tariff structure would be based upon, not necessarily the debt-equity ratio that the project actually is financed on.
Okay. So this would not necessarily reduce the return to the people who would otherwise own this share of the corporation?
Assuming... It would not change the debt-to-equity ratio that the tariff structure is based upon. So this alone is not going to change that 70-30, so it's not going to affect those the figures that we've shown you about the effect on the tariff structure. Assuming that the project is financed based upon some other maximization of return for the overall entity, they would come up with their own debt-to-equity ratio for that. With this requirement, they would have to give a portion of the equity side of that to the permanent fund, for example. So that would reduce the available equity for the remainder entity, whatever it may be. But these are all moving parts. The fact that they have to give the equity to the permanent fund may change their decision about where they would set that debt ratio so that they get a return they want. It's not necessarily a straight line. But it would affect ultimately the return opportunity of the remaining equity holders.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson.
Mr. Galvin, doesn't the permanent fund have limits on investments by type?
Yes.
Is the billion dollars well above in any one investment or investment device? Above that, was it? For some reason, I think it's around $200 million, but I might be wrong on that.
Through the chair, it's not necessarily based upon a dollar figure.
It's a
percentage figure, and the actual limitations are primarily on how much of an entity the permanent fund could own, and then it's a prudent investor policy with regard to the diversification of the overall fund. First off, the language here does not limit this to just the Permanent Fund Corporation as the only entity that could participate in this. There would be separate limitations potentially on how these entities would participate. The 5% is a floor. It's not a ceiling. There would be a limitation on how much these entities could participate, both in terms of the ownership percentage of the overall entity and also in keeping with their own investment requirements. And so this alone isn't going to change whether or not the permanent fund can or cannot participate in this at the level that the entity may want them to. But it does create basically a closed market that the licensee has an obligation under this to offer at least 5% to a limited number of potential investors. And then the limitation is they have to offer it at reasonable commercial terms, and that's a subject to interpretation. So that's, you know, that there's a variety of issues associated with how this would actually play out that we don't have a direct answer to. I think the intent was to make it as clear as possible so that hopefully all the parties will work to resolve that. But it is that level of uncertainty and the additional burden that it places that causes us concern.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And back to Representative Ramirez.
Thank you. Just in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that this complexity diminishes the chances of AGIA attracting qualified applicants to become the licensee. I think that the fixed rate of return, which will be fixed by FERC, is so desirable that the ARM board, the PERS board, ADA, the Alaska Energy Association, the Alaska Permanent Fund Division, any combination of these state agencies would be delighted to participate, as would any of us, where we offered a fixed 12% to 14% return on something over the next 30 to 50 years, be delighted to participate in this. And the thing that I want to say in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, is that Alaskans have expressed a desire for quite some time to actually own the pipeline. And this is a passive way in which Alaskans can do it without diminishing the rights of the state of Alaska as a sovereign entity that needs to be the state of Alaska and should not enjoy an ownership, as we saw with the cumbersome application of Alaska Pipeco or whatever that entity was last year that kind of kerfuffled the whole thing. This is not as artful a language as I want, but it is conceptual in nature. And I think this really represents a very viable idea, which is Alaskans get to own part of an excellent return. I sure wish that we would have had this paragraph in the TAPS project 30-some-odd years ago. We would consider it a significant source of income in the general fund today, vis-a-vis ADA, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, or the other income sources that deliver money annually to the general fund. And so I really speak in strong support of amendment number 23. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bullock.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as the drafter, conceptual amendments are always interesting. Well, it gives me a lot of freedom. I don't want to step into the policy area.
Gives you a lot of power, too.
I'd rather not have the power or the blame or the responsibility. It might be helpful to actually identify the agencies that you intend to have this option. And Representative Olson brought up a good point about whether they have the authority to invest already to be able to participate in this. It's also going to be dependent on the form of the organization, the form of the licensee. It might be a limited partnership, might be a corporation. If it's a company that has traded stock, then permanent fund, if they already were authorized to buy stock in that corporation, they could do it without this amendment. Under this conceptual amendment, that I assume that this is separate money from the $500 million, or is it the same money as the $500 million? So there'd be a certain amount of money invested. You might consider how much you want to commit to this.
Representative Ramos?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bullock, you have been so helpful on so many things. You're the greatest guy, truly. The state of Alaska now owns more than $200 million worth of Exxon stock through the Alaska Permanent Fund, but I doubt that anybody has any equity stake or ownership pride in the fact that if the state Permanent Fund Division owns some of Exxon, then we own some of the reserves. Otherwise, the state of Alaska would have been upset that the citizens of the state of Alaska would have been upset that the state of Alaska took Point Thompson away from Exxon, because it would have diminished our value as shareholders. And citizens did not make that association just because they have an ownership through the Permanent Fund Division of Exxon Mobil Corporation traded stock. And so I would submit to you that this is much more direct, that this is something that Alaskans do in fact want. And we took Mr. Bullock's language and we kind of condensed it a little bit. We are not the final committee of referral, or I'd be much more careful about the artfulness of this language, but the concept here certainly can be fleshed out by resources or finance as it moves through. And I think Alaskans do want to own part of the hardware, and I certainly know that the permanent fund, because I've gone through the scope of their investments, and a fixed return of between 12% and 14% is very desirable to the permanent fund division. So I speak again in favor of this amendment, in spite of the warnings of our friendly drafter.
I was going to make the same observation that we have opportunities to refine the language if we choose to do so in a subsequent committee, and Representative Kawasaki and I serve on the Resources Committee, so we can contemplate that at that time and work with you in approving some improved language, if that makes sense? Approving improved language, okay. If need be. So, good point. Mr. Bullock, would you please respond to Representative Samuel's concern, which I'm not really a concern, but a point that perhaps we might want to consider placing this in a different location in the bill, in the criteria section, as opposed to where it's currently proposed. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, if it isn't the criteria section, like the commissioner pointed out, that the analysis and the award of the license are based on the expected net present value and the likelihood of success of the project. And this doesn't really relate to any of the decision-making part. I'm not sure exactly where to put it. I mean, it could be put into the list of promises that are included on the application with the qualifying language added that this does not consider this won't be considered in the factors as to whether the licensee is the one that's awarded or not, but just that if they are awarded, that they have to basically provide what amounts to an option to the state to invest. Okay. I am concerned, you know, to ensure that the liability doesn't follow the interest.
Okay. Any further thoughts? I was the one that objected to the amendment, and was it you? I'm sorry. Do you wish to remove your objection to this, Representative Samuels?
No, I think I'm going to maintain the objection. To the objection, you know, we had talked a year ago about finding mechanisms where individuals could invest their permanent fund and get the rate, and I would disagree with the characterization that it's a locked-in 12%. You don't get the money for 12 years, and there, as much as we characterize as the low-risk part being the pipeline, of course there's risk associated with it. So I would think as we go down the road talking to the licensee about some other sort of investment mechanism might be appropriate. It would be relatively a small amount of money, but it would be more of a community-minded type of thing. If you wanted to set up a program, you can invest your dividend, check a box, something along those lines. But I think that the way it's right now, I've still got some problems with it, so I'm going to maintain my objection.
I would like to make a final remark, too, before we actually vote on this. And Jay, you make a very strong and compelling argument, and you speak very eloquently, and you've got a real good idea here that I believe most of my colleagues here on the committee and elsewhere will side with, concur with. With all due respect, I'm going to oppose the amendment, just strictly due to philosophical grounds. Last year, I was concerned about the administration's proposal for state ownership of the gas line as well. That was one of my biggest concerns, and just for the sake of being consistent and to follow my philosophy, I would respectfully disagree of the need to pass this amendment, but very well presented. I appreciate your intent here, and like you said, I'm sure most of my colleagues will support this, and you and I agree on 99.9% of the issues, and this is one of the tiny areas that we disagree with, but thank you for
Mr. Chairman,
for your very strong and compelling presentation of this amendment. So with that, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on amendment number 23.
Representative Dugan?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Dahlstrom?
No.
Representative Samuel?
No.
Representative Ramirez?
Yes.
Chair Corrin?
No.
Two yay and five nay.
Did you vote?
No, I'd like to comment, though.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative. With the vote of two yeses and five noes, amendment number 23 has failed to pass. Representative Olson?
I'd like to work with you on this, fleshing it out and seeing if we get something that we can do further on.
Yes. Thank you.
And I'd be pleased to join him in that effort, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know how to take no well for an answer, and if you didn't like number 23, you're going to love 24.
Am I sure poor at predicting outcomes of votes, too? Man, I missed that by a mile. I thought it was going to be near unanimous in favor of it. But. Okay, we'll move to amendment number 24. Representative Rambis.
I move amendment number 24, Mr. Chairman.
Object? Representative Rambis.
He objected to all mine.
I understand.
No, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if we discuss a fiduciary obligation, $500 million to get to an open season. My colleague to my right, who just wrecked me on amendment number 23, has talked at length about the risk we run of who's going to show up for the open season. And, Mr. Chairman, if you had an apartment building and it was empty and you were going to build it and you were going to take all that construction risk to get there and to get her built, would you risk, you know, a month of free rent and free cable TV in order to fill up that apartment building if once it was built you could sustain that occupancy and meet your debt service obligations? And so to that end, and this is another amendment not loved by the administration. me and Galvin, we're friends now, so when he grins at me like that, I'm down with that now, Commissioner. A couple of weeks ago, we might have gone in the hallway. So my concern is that we're spending $500 million for dollar-for-dollar inducement to get to the open season with no guarantee that anybody's going to show up. Mm-hmm. And despite the value, the upstream value of the commodity, I'm interested in making this sweeter for the producers to nominate their gas in for the open season. There certainly is a question with Article 9, Section 1, I think. Is that right, Mr. Bullock? about the constitutionality of fiscal certainty, or as our new friends of the new Exxon say with their euphemism and their new semantics, fiscal predictability, they say, which is a softer, kinder, gentler fiscal certainty. If that survives the constitutional test, then I think it would be in our interest to induce gas into the open season by offering a 20% discount, not on all of the money that will accrue to the state of Alaska, but just the portion of which we would see on the production, I think there's a word missing in this, which is why it's a conceptual amendment, state tax on the production. Maybe that is right. It's exempt from the state's tax on the production gas. I think that is the way that we ultimately decided to draft it. So if the period of fiscal predictability is 10 years, then this would survive for half of that period, offering a 20% reduction on the state's tax for that period of time. We don't know yet what that tax rate will be, because we're still operating off of the PPT rates, which were established for oil, and we rolled gas into that, and we have not established a current gas tax rate. But this is easy enough to calculate. 10 years of fiscal predictability for half that period, a 20% discount on the production cost of the gas in order to induce and make it a little bit sweeter for the producers to queue up for the initial open season. Pretty simple and straightforward, Mr. Chairman. I suggest we could just remove the objection and get on to amendment number 25.
Get on to the most important one, the one sponsored by me. Okay. Representative Dugan and then Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be opposing this amendment, not because I have a problem with the method that my friend from Fairbanks is trying to add, but because I'm opposed to the idea of attempting to incentivize, if I may use that word, this pipeline through taxes. You know, as I've been sort of said consistently throughout the committee's deliberations, it's my view that if the state is being approached, as we've been told time and again, because we're an owner of the gas, that the incentive ought to be in the state's ownership interest, which is the royalty, and not the tax. So I've sort of been consistently opposed to this provision. And I'll be opposed to the amendment as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dugan. Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Chairman. The maker of the amendment and I sat in these two very chairs a year ago and discussed this very topic for about 8 months. And quite frankly, it deserved that. It deserved all the pain and the anguish of going through, of hearing graph after graph after graph after economist after economist after economist. And at the end of the day, we may end up here. We might end up right in the exact same place. And it might go up, though, and it might go down. And we don't know where it should end up. And in my own mind, I'm still going round and round. I've had the conversation with Commissioner Galvin on, do you want to have the tax fight now? If I don't know what my customer's tax is going to be 3 years from now, am I less likely to team up and actually have something going forward, or do I wait 3 years and have it? So I think it deserves, obviously, we're going to go round and round about this. Whether we do it now or we do it 3 years from now, we're going to have an at-length debate on the gas tax, even if you set aside the constitutional issue, Representative Dugan's issue on locking it in. If you assume you can lock it in for the 10 years, we are going to go on at length about what total government take and field size and. So I appreciate actually getting the topic out there, because the topic is going to be key to the entire debate, either now or later. So I very much appreciate that. And I don't know if that was the point, if they're very much or not. I would imagine so, but and with that, I'll just leave it at that. I certainly appreciate the getting the topic out on the on the table for debate.
Mm-hmm. Further remarks?
Mr. Chairman, sometimes you win by losing, and I certainly can appreciate the concerns of conceptual amendment number 24. But the fact is that the $500 million inducement to get to the open season, with all due respect, we should be trying to induce participation in the open season, and this is an excellent subject matter. I think with that, I am going to withdraw amendment number 24. If it's not the whole enchilada, it certainly is more than the beans and rice, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Ramos, thank you. And I want you to know that you would not have been alone in that vote. I was a yes vote on that one, but we will not have a vote as a result of your withdrawal of that amendment. But I appreciate the
Mr. Chairman, you're welcome to reintroduce it as amendment number 25. I'm a yes vote on it, too, but I think we might be lonely.
All right. Okay, we'll move to what I believe is to be the final amendment. Before I do that, though, I just wanted to recognize a few individuals. There's been some folks that have been consistently coming to the meetings that I failed to recognize, that I want to thank you for, from various offices. We've got Barbara Cotting from Representative Ramirez's office, who's been very faithful in showing up here. I wanted to just acknowledge you and thank you for being here. And then Portia Parker back there from Lida Green's office, a longtime friend of mine. I want to thank her for her perseverance with all the meetings that we have had. And then former Representative Tom Bryce has been coming to these meetings a lot. It looks to me like he's stepped out, but I wanted to recognize him too. And Cheryl Sutton from my colleague Ralph Samuels' office has been here. And then Kevin Banks from Oil and Gas, I wanted to acknowledge you out there as well and thank all of you for attending these meetings. And it's just been great to have you here and be a part of this, what really amounts to a historical piece of legislation here that it's been our honor to work on and hopefully see a very good result from. So what I'd like to do is to make a motion to adopt amendment number 25 at this time. That's from myself. I'm the sponsor. Okay, thank you very much. It has been objected to, and I'd like to speak to that. I appreciate the objection for that reason. It's been brought to my attention that the committee substitutes language that I had actually inserted in there that would change that time limit from 36 down to 24 months. It was my understanding that if we did it that way, we'd kind of speed the process up, but I inadvertently did not recognize the pitfalls that potentially created, and the big one is the fact that it might, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner Galvin, but it might actually limit, work against us and limit potential applicants that might actually use the the statute here. And it was also brought to my attention that we had testimony that, for some reason, I didn't pick up on by one of the smaller producers from last week. Was it last week? I guess it was. Who indicated that they felt they need at least 30 months. So what I'd like to do is to offer this amendment to change it back to what it was originally from 236 months from the current 24 that's in the CS. Mr. Galvin, would you please reinforce my argument on this, if you would?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. When we had offered the original 36-month as the outer time frame, it was with the idea of balancing a number of interests, not just trying to ensure that we get as many participants in the process, but also what I think we are all focused on is trying to provide as much opportunity for a successful open season as possible. And what we do recognize is that there's a balance with regard to that open season, that the sooner that you have it, the less work that's gone into it, and it may be less likely to ultimately succeed. And so we wanted to provide a time frame that would allow the applicants to determine for their own purposes what is the appropriate time frame to get an open season. 36 months from our vantage point still kept the process moving along quick enough, but allowed the applicants to fit within that time frame the timing of the open season that they feel would provide the optimal time frame for success. But just to note that it is an outer limit, that they are competing on this term along with others, and they could easily propose open season date that's much shorter than either 36 or 24 months. And so we're not necessarily going to end up with a longer time frame simply because we're going back to 36. We're just allowing the participants to designate what would be the most appropriate from their vantage point, and then we'll compare them on those terms and pick the best one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Any comments on this amendment? Representative Sandwich, do you care to
move my objection?
Okay. With that objection being removed, hearing no, foreseeing no further objection, amendment number 25 is passed. Thank you very much. I failed to mention two individuals. Conrad Jackson from Representative Olson's office has been here throughout the whole meetings, and thank you very much, sir. And then Ken, I don't remember your last name. Ken from Dugan's office. Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir, for your participation as well. And just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anybody and make anybody feel slighted. So before us, we have the version of the legislation here, the CS with all the amendments. And is there anybody that wishes to offer any final remarks before we get to the point of moving this bill from committee? Representative Ramirez and then Dahlstrom.
Dahlstrom, go first, please.
Nancy?
I was just going to make a motion.
Okay. Did you have any comments, Representative Ramirez?
Mr. Chair, it's inappropriate to be self-congratulatory, so I appreciate you recognizing everybody else in the room and not your not yourself or your own efforts or Jim Pound and your whole crew, but you guys have worked tirelessly on this. You've been an exceptional chairman. You've been gracious to all the members and to all the presenters, and you have, I think, helped to smooth the administration's presentation. You made Commissioner Galvin just to be like Mr. Butter. He's a more effective communicator, I think, because of the forum that you've provided him in this community, or in this committee. And I thank you for your help and your bringing your knowledge and easygoing nature to this. You've made this an easier work product for all of us to participate in, feel welcome in. And I just want to recognize you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for those kind remarks. I really appreciate that, my friend. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As one of the newcomers to this process, I want to thank you and the other members of the committee for putting up with my incessant and often juvenile questions on this on this whole business, and otherwise to associate myself with the comments that my friend from Fairbanks made on your handling of this committee.
You're quite welcome.
And I want to take particular note of the lack of political partisanship that was involved in these proceedings, and it's my fervent hope that throughout this process in both the House and over on the other side, that is the rule, because this is not really a partisan issue.
Right.
And I hope that everyone else will be able to remember that. I mean, we have plenty of partisan issues in this building, and we can deal with those as appropriate, but I hope that everyone else will remember that as they work on this bill, too. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you very much for those kind remarks. I appreciate it, Representative Dugan. Representative Samuels.
Thank you. Some comments on the bill itself. I, first of all, appreciate very much the administration's work they put into this. I know that from mid-December on, they haven't had weekends, and they haven't had nights off, and they how much work has gone into this. I do have still some concerns, however, or questions. My knee-jerk reaction, I got briefed on this. Quite frankly, I got briefed on this before you guys. Mm-hmm. I had a very short conversation with an administration official, and my knee-jerk reaction was, why don't we have an equity share for the $500 million or an option to buy? If we're taking half the risk, why don't we take half the reward? Mm-hmm. And I have not been convinced. I'm still listening, but I have not been convinced that that is not still an appropriate risk-reward measure. Mm-hmm. I haven't been convinced that spending money after an open season, a failed open season. You know, I was surprised at TransCanada's comments. And since then, the very last people that testified were Chevron, and they made some comments on the way things actually work in Canada with rolled-in tariffs and the return on equity. And I will, as one legislator, I will try to do more research on that, and I will spread it with these committee members. I fear that I pick a partner and that 11 years later I picked the wrong partner and they're leveraging me. And that I voiced that to the Mid-America person. I was going to voice it to the TransCanada, but they surprised me with their testimony. So, but it those fears, I'm not overwhelmingly pro or con this thing. I understand where the administration came from on these things. But if we get a partner at a failed open season who just turns to us and says, boy, you have to get me the gas, then you're going to have to convince me pretty long and hard that we're the ones on the outs. So I will continue to listen to the debates. It's sometimes easier when you're not sitting on the committee trying to do this and do the ethics thing and Representative Ramis's committee, where you get more time on your hands. But those are some of the concerns that I still have on the bill, and I'll be talking to the administration as one legislator as we go down through the process. The bill has to pass. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we cannot, and we have to work with the administration, and I realize that. But I certainly would, I'll be thinking about those issues for me as one individual. I'll be thinking about those issues on going down the road and trying to alleviate my own concern. Thank you very much. Great.
Thank you very much, Representative Samuels. Representative Olson.
Well, I'd like to thank Chairman Corrigan for his efforts in this, and I think my only comment is that if it's smooth in the next two committees, we'll probably get out of here on time. Yeah. But if it's not, we're going to be here in May and June.
Get the old fishing pole out, right?
That's right.
Okay, just some final quick remarks for myself. I know we're anxious to get this bill passed and get out of here, but I again want to thank the committee members too, and thank you for your kind remarks. I just kind of consider myself the facilitator and the guy that tried to prevent any rumble from happening in the committee here in the course of working on this bill here. You guys did a great effort, and you guys did the real heavy lifting on this bill. I just kind of overseed, but I do thank you for your very kind remarks, your compliments, and it's been a real honor working with you guys. And the special thing about this bill is that it's really is historic, and particularly if we succeed in getting that gas line through. So we've all played a very important role in that process, and it's been just great working with you all. And I want to thank you again for your efforts. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Representative Kawasaki or Dahlstrom for a motion. You guys want to flip a coin?
Do you have any comments? I don't have any comments.
Go ahead. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to make a motion to move from this committee the CS for House Bill number 177-25-GH1060/E with amendments, mm-hmm. both conceptual and written, and there's no physical notes, just with individual recommendations and any physical notes.
And accompanying physical notes.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd try to say
that was a mouthful. But we have a motion before us, as noted. Are there any objections to the motion as noted? Seeing none, House Bill 177 as amended has passed from the Oil Gas Committee. So with that, we will close this meeting at 4:22. Thank you very much.
Thank you.